You're lost, alone in the woods. You don't have food, feeling hungry, and the sound of wolves howling in the distance. What do you do? How do you survive? Well, join us as Nick Buck breaks it down for us, a wilderness survival instructor that will share some tips that may save your life. Let's go. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the High Stakes Success Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Day. What do you do if you're lost and stranded in the wilderness? How do you survive? I can't think of a more high-stakes situation than that. So we've got a very cool guest on today. We have Nick Buck, who is a wilderness survival instructor as well as a professional mountain guide, to talk to us all about wilderness survival. So Nick, for our listeners, could you tell us a little bit about your background and what it is you do in terms of wilderness survival with your career as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm head instructor at Survival in Canada, and we're Western Canada's leading survival school. We teach wilderness survival and wilderness living skills to a range of people, from members of the public all the way up to elements of the military. So I get a lot of dirt time, a lot of time out there in the bush doing what I love to do, following my passion. And then in my sort of downtime from that, I get to work as a mountain guide, taking people up into the high alpine on foot or horseback to show them the beauty of the mountains. So I'm a real lucky guy.
That is really amazing. So what was it that first attracted you to that sort of lifestyle, to being in the wilderness?
That's a tough one for me to pin down at times. I suppose that I just quite simply can't imagine doing anything else. It's a calling, it's a lifestyle, it's very much who I am. And I've been outdoors for most of my life, right from my early childhood, and I quite simply couldn't imagine doing anything else.
That's really awesome. Okay, so I want to talk about how to survive in the wilderness. So if a person were to find themselves alone in the wild, let's say night is falling, they're in the forest, they don't really have a lot with them that they had prepared to survive in the wild, what do you have to do? What's the step-by-step process to make sure you can kind of make it through and get home eventually?
Well, that's a great question. And, initially you asked me what happens if you get into a situation like that. And the first thing that we like to teach people is to change their mindsets. So I would say that we should approach the situation with the question, what happens when I find myself in that situation?
Right.
If we use the conditional if, it makes it seem a lot less likely than saying, what happens when I find myself in trouble?
Okay.
So we start very early on by changing people's mindset and teaching them to use their mind as a tool. Your question is what to do when we find ourselves in these difficult situations. And we need to assess the situation is the very first thing that we must do. We must assess what the risks and dangers are, and they're going to be different in each scenario that we can find ourselves in. And then we need to prioritize the risks to us, and then we need to start dealing with them. In its broadest sense, that's how we would approach it.
Okay, so there's like a step-by-step, essentially a system that you kind of approach. So for example, is it important to build shelter first, or what's the first step in that process?
You know, if we think of the sort of textbook scenario of people perhaps out hiking or, lost in the bush, then of course something like shelter is going to be hugely important. But we would teach people, first of all, that they need to stop. Okay, so I'm going to teach you a little later on five letters that will save your life, hopefully, or potentially.
Oh, wow, great.
We'll go on to that. But the first thing that people should do is just stop. Stop their feet moving, take a knee, take a seat, and calm down. Because it's incredible how people can find themselves 24, 48, 72 hours into a scenario without ever having calmed down and thought about things and thought clearly and properly. And people have gotten themselves in some serious trouble because they failed to do that. So the very first thing you should do in a situation is to just stop. Take a seat, take a knee, and assess the situation. Now, hopefully, you will have put all of the right measures in place prior to getting out there in the bush. And that's a big thing we teach is proper planning and prevention. Sorry, proper planning and preparation prevents poor performance.
Okay. So, go on.
No, and if a person has planned properly, then they should know that rescue is not far away.
Okay. So how does a person plan properly? Is it about what you bring with you into the wilderness when you go out there? What exactly are the steps beforehand to prepare?
Proper planning is absolutely essential, and it'll save your life. I've got a friend who's head of a provincial organization involved with search and rescue and emergencies. And that person told me very simply that statistically, the most risky activity you'll ever undertake is a day hike. That's because people don't plan properly. So if you and I were going out for a 3 or 4 day hike, you tell every person you work with that you were going away. You tell your partner, your friends, your neighbor. You'd let them know when you were leaving and when you were coming back. You'd have spare clothes. You'd have rain gear. You'd have enough food for a day or two extra. All of these things are things that we find people neglect when it comes to the day hike. So there's your answer. There's your list. Essentially, before heading out into a wilderness environment, you need to make sure that you have put the proper steps in place. You need to make sure that people know where you're going, know when to expect you back, and you need to have a proper plan in place if that doesn't manifest. People aren't going to find you if they're not looking for you, and people aren't going to look for you if they don't know you're missing. So we need to, prior to heading out, we need to inform two separate parties, two separate individuals of our plans, so that if we don't return when and where we say we're going to, they can start the search for us, ultimately.
Right. So it all really begins before the journey even starts to wherever you're going, is letting people know about it.
It absolutely does. And then, of course, the next aspect of being properly prepared is the equipment and knowledge that we take with us into the bush. Okay? If you go out into a wilderness environment without the correct equipment and without the correct knowledge and without the correct mindset, then you are inviting trouble.
Right. Wow. Okay. That's really awesome. To know that it actually begins so early. And also the part about the mindset you were talking about was very interesting as well. How much does that come into play when somebody finds himself in a potentially dangerous situation, you know, being in the wild and needing to survive? How much does a psychological aspect come into play, like the need to kind of positively reinforce yourself and to kind of give yourself self-talk that kind of calms you down and allows you to kind of figure out what to do?
Survival psychology is huge. Psychology plays a huge role in survival. The correct mindset separates the winners from the losers. And that's how we have to approach it as a game, a high stakes game. Surviving out there is a high stakes game. If you want to win, you need to bring the right frame of mind. You need to bring it a game. It's important to remember that the will to survive beats the skill to survive. If you're able to remain positive, think rationally and think outside of the box, then you will overcome any situation presented to you, barring, you know, bad luck, a lightning strike or an injury.
Right.
The ability to think critically in stressful situations is something that we in our training instill in our students.
That's really great. So the psychology plays a huge role. So I guess it becomes a factor of being able to not overreact when you're in that sort of situation and to kind of be able to be as rational as you can, but also kind of tell yourself that you will get out of this and there is an end to this that's going to be good.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, people have people have sat down and died. It's as simple as that. People have given up. Some people give up before they leave the house each morning, and some people are just very negative. At the other end of the spectrum, you get incredibly positive, strong-minded people. You know, the Navy SEAL Marcus Luttrell, who recounts the tale of finding himself smashed to pieces but reaching forward with one arm and scratching a line in the sand and dragging himself to that line and saying to himself, if I can drag myself to that line, I'll just drag myself to the next line. And he did that for X many miles. That's the mentality you must have, the sort of not dead, can't quit mentality. That coupled with the ability to remain calm, cool, and collected and assess a situation and think about it rationally. Assess what are the challenges presenting themselves to me, how can I best overcome them?
Wow. That's powerful stuff. That's got like parallels to life, I feel.
Absolutely. Ways, right? We find that a lot of our students stay in touch with us, and we've seen a lot of changes. You know, we work with a number of youth groups, and we take them out into wilderness situations, and we teach them these very sort of, you know, a skill set that may seem very practical and perhaps limited in its scope and its use, but we find seeing some of these youth years later that the skills and lessons learned out there, the harsh realities of life on the mountain, carry forward and carry across into other aspects. In fact, I would say every other aspect of a person's life. Yeah.
Wow. And yeah, I guess when you're kind of, you've trained and you're good at being able to survive in that sort of situation in the wilderness, other things in life seem a little bit easier by comparison, I would imagine.
When you've been up at 8,000, 9,000 feet and the snow's coming up at you, and you've got a person with a broken leg and hypothermia, and you somebody's lost a satellite phone and somebody's dropped a bag of food, something as simple as a breaker going in an apartment block or a truck breaking down on the side of the highway seems really manageable after that.
Yeah. No doubt. And that kind of segues into what I wanted to ask a little bit about, which was survival in different environments. Like you mentioned, a snowy mountain, and by contrast, a desert where it's very hot and there's no water, obviously. So what are the methods of survival in these different sorts of environments?
And one of the things we would do as part of our preparation would be to learn as much as we can about any and every environment that we're going to go into. You know, before you get on a commercial airliner, learn about the countries you're going to be flying over just in case the worst happens. So if we're heading into, for example, the mountains, you would want to know as much, you would want to know everything about them, but you would want to make sure that you were carrying as much information in your head as possible. And that would help you prepare properly, because ultimately, when presented with a survival situation, we sit down, as I've said, and we assess what are the challenges before us, and we think of the rule of threes. And the rule of threes is a little memory technique to help us prioritize the way that we are going to beat these challenges, meet the challenges, beat these enemies that are up against us. So most folks have got an idea in the head that they're going to either be attacked by a grizzly bear or starve to death. And statistically, unplanned wilderness scenarios don't end through starvation or animal attack. So the rule of threes would very simply say that you're going to survive for 3 minutes as a guideline without oxygen. Well, you know, for your average person on the street, we're not discussing egress from a helicopter that's in the water, etc. So that brings us on to the next challenge. Hey, I'm breathing. I'm going to last longer than 3 minutes. Now what's going to kill me? And in a cold, wet, snowy mountain environment, it's going to be hypothermia. Okay, hypothermia, the lack of your ability to retain your body heat. Now, we're going to be preparing for that in a certain way, but that is going to apply in any environment. Now, of course, in a desert environment, it would be hyperthermia that is going to kill us. Too much body heat. It doesn't matter. We arrive at it in the same manner. We arrive at it. It's the first priority is stabilizing and controlling our body temperature, maintaining proper thermoregulation. For example, in a mountain environment, you're going to want to be able to erect a shelter within 5 minutes and to start a fire in the next 5 minutes. Okay. Within 10 minutes, you ought to be able to erect a waterproof, windproof shelter that helps to create a microclimate and a fire. Those two things working properly in conjunction with each other are going to allow you to survive longer than the 3 hours, which is the next aspect of the rule of threes, that hypothermia would render you up the creek.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a desert environment, you would want to be looking for naturally cooler areas, any area that may be channeling the wind, any area that may have shade, of course, any way we could get up and off of the desert surface, the sand or the rock. You know, conduction, surface to surface, is the most efficient method of heat transfer. So when we learn to assess the situation and break it down into its critical components, it then follows that we're able to deal with the rest of it is just details once you've done that. And that applies in a desert environment and that applies in a snowy mountain environment. The only difference is the details.
Right. So that seemed like some pretty short times. Within 5 minutes, getting a fire going, were you saying?
By the end of our courses, a person can get a mountain going in 10 seconds. And then it just becomes a question of accessing and processing enough fuel, essentially right. Firewood for that fire.
And I'm sure that's an incredibly complex discussion to go deeply into all of these things. But that does seem like that you've trained yourself and others around you to be able to react within a short amount of time when it comes to being in a stressful, dangerous situation.
You know, Jesse, most people would have the thought that getting a fire going in 30 seconds, in 5 seconds, 5 minutes, whatever, is going to be a real challenge, and it's not. And I'm going to give you a tip right now.
Okay, great.
If you ever head out into the wilderness, you should carry a ferrocerium firelighting rod, you know, the sort of survival flint.
Okay.
$5, Cochran's brand. You'll get them in any sporting goods store. Those things are excellent because you are able to use them when cold, injured, stressed, or you have hypothermia. When a person has hypothermia, they lose their fine motor skills.
Right.
So you can use these things without the dexterity that you may have lost.
Okay.
They also don't run out of gas. They work well in the wind. They work when you've fallen through the ice.
Wow.
So you should carry one of those. You should also carry a fire starter.
Okay.
And you needn't spend much money. Get two cotton wool pads, the makeup removing pads from the dollar store. Make sure they say 100% cotton.
Sure.
And you want to put a spoon of Vaseline between the two of them and throw a couple of those in a sandwich bag.
Okay.
When the time comes, remember not if the time comes, when the time comes that your hiking partner is hypothermic and you're lost and it's 30 minutes until it gets dark and hey, probably best to light the fire now, simply pull out one of the cotton pads and fluff it up and land a spark on it. That thing's going to burn for 10 minutes. Okay. And you're going to go and find a dead standing tree of diameter 4 inches or greater. Very simply, rain and wind will drive water into wood a depth of an inch and a half. So if the tree is 3 inches, it is potentially saturated to the center. If it's 4 inches, I know it has a dry center. And we're going to basically break that tree down and access that dry wood. And it works. I've done it. I was out recently, back in February, northern BC, 35 below, very windy, and we had a person lose their ability to operate, and we were able to get a fire going within minutes and get that person stabilized in a shelter with a fire going within minutes.
So speaking of that and the preparation, what are some of the essential things that basically everybody wants to have if they're going into the wilderness at all? Like, what are the tools that everyone should just have on them?
Fantastic. You know, that's a great question. And this is something that I think should be taught to absolutely everybody. You are foolhardy if you venture into the wilderness for any period of time without the following. You certainly want to be able to maintain correct body temperature. As we've discussed, realistically, that's the first thing that's going to take you down, take you out of the game, is lack of thermoregulation. So a proper microclimate, that can start with clothing. You know, you want a base layer and you want some insulating mid layers and a waterproof outer layer. Very simple. So you would also, based on that or building on that, you would want the ability to erect a shelter. Doesn't have to be an expensive tarp, doesn't have to be a tent. It can be a sheet of polythene drop cloth from the dollar store. There we go again, it'll cost you a dollar or two. And you can rig that up in 2 minutes. So to provide a microclimate. Okay. You would then want a cutting tool that's going to allow you to access the dry firewood, as we've discussed, that's inside the wet wood. So people ask, hey, where do you find dry firewood when the weather's wet? You find it inside the wet wood. So you need to be able to split down and process that wet wood. I would say that you then need a fire lighting device. And as I've said, the only one that I would trust my life to is a ferrocerium rod. I carry a Bic, I carry a Zippo, I carry two or three different types of matches, but I carry a ferro rod around my neck.
Okay, you can get that online, right? We'll put a link in the description. We are not being sponsored, but if you're saying that this thing is so essential, then I think people should be aware of where they can get it.
People think they need to spend a lot of money, and they don't. I would think realistically for $20, you're going to be able to put together a survival kit that could potentially save you or your loved one's lives.
I'm happy to share the
contents of that kit with you and perhaps post that if you'd like.
Yeah, we can absolutely do that.
We'll do that in the description.
So what else should people carry when venturing out into the wilderness? We've discussed that they need to carry their own microclimate in the form of clothing components to build a rudimentary shelter. We've talked about a cutting tool, a knife. We've talked about a fire lighting device, a combustion device. We are then going to talk about a water bottle or container. We're the only animal that can take the creek with us, okay? Because it really sucks to get seriously dehydrated. And it happens surprisingly often in cold, wet environments. When you're cold and you're wet, you don't remember to drink. Okay. I would recommend getting a stainless steel or aluminum water bottle for the simple reason that if all you've got is the stanky, nasty beaver pond, you're going to be able to sterilize, disinfect that water and make it safe to drink through boiling or pasteurization, essentially putting it on the fire. And then another high value, high bang for your buck item to carry is cordage or string. Something as simple as a busted bootlace or the strap on a rucksack can really mess with your plans. It can delay you, and it can turn a nice day hike into a night out in the wilderness. So we would sum that up by saying you should carry the 5 C's. Cover, a cutting tool, a combustion device, a container, and cordage. You should have the 5 C's on you at all times when in the wilderness. With those 5 C's and the correct knowledge, you are going to be able to survive for the 72 hours that statistics tell us 90% of these scenarios last.
So the traditional advice that I always heard growing up was that you never want to move. If you're missing in the woods, you want to always stay where you are. Is that correct? Does that hold true?
You know, that's a tough question, and we never teach black and white rules. We never teach concrete rules. We teach thought processes and skills. Okay, so I'm going to teach people the thought process, and I'm going to give them a mental toolbox to use. Yeah. I would say that generally staying where you are is a good idea. A number of things are going to change that. If you're in a light aircraft and it crashes onto the exposed northern side of a mountain up above the snow line, and you can see that there's a tree line, you're going to be moving. That's common sense. You know, if you can see that you're in the path of danger, an avalanche path, if you find your truck has gone off the roadside and you're in a terrible location, you're going to move to a better location. Generally speaking, you know, the old debate in our heads, should I stay or should I go? You should stay. You should stay, because if you're lost, you're likely to get yourself more lost. You're likely to get yourself deeper into the bush. The chances of just happening upon the path are slim if you don't know what you're doing. And often these situations arise because of a mechanical failure, either catastrophic in terms of a light aircraft going down or something, an electrical fault on a work truck. Those vehicles are a lot easier to find from the air than a little hairless ape strolling around under the tree canopy. So it makes a lot of sense to stay with something as large and easily locatable as a vehicle. Yeah.
Right. So what about when it comes to wild animals? Is it, it's quite uncommon, right, to actually be put in a dangerous situation with an animal in the wild?
As I've mentioned before, one of the roles that I play is taking people out to find wild animals.
Right.
It can be a lot more challenging than we like it to be at times. It can be a real, real tough one. It can happen, and it does happen, that people are on the receiving end of a bad time from a wild animal. It's very rare. You are at much greater risk of having the poster behind you fall on your head and lacerate you and you bleeding out there in the studio than of a grizzly or a black bear or a cougar or wolf or anything else causing you any mischief. Having said that, we want to influence the situation, control and manage the situation to minimize the risks and maximize our advantages. So we teach common sense things, you know, don't store food on your body, you know, don't have a granola bar in your pocket and then get into your sleeping bag. Don't sleep and cook in the same area. You know, you okay. want to cook your
one.
Food, I would say, as far away as is practicable. Why wouldn't you? You know, if you can get 100 yards away, do it 100 yards away. I would say a minimum of 50 feet away
right.
because those cooking smells linger. I would say that you would like to store all food and toiletries in a bag suspended from a branch as far away as practicable. And you can say, why toiletries? For some reason, the bears... they'll go for your lip salve. They'll go for your toothpaste. It's an interesting smell. Hey, they'll rip into it, potentially. So you don't want to have your toothpaste in your pocket when you're asleep because it was in the jacket and you were, you know, you need to think. Okay.
Right.
Again, and it comes down to stopping and thinking. Okay. So finally, with animals, remaining calm and understanding animal behavior is going to be what saves you. A lot of people, when they encounter a bear, turn tail and run, and
right.
that triggers a response in the bear. It's going to run you down because if you weren't tasty, you wouldn't be scared.
Right.
If you could defend yourself, you wouldn't be scared. And if you weren't scared, you wouldn't be running.
Right.
So we teach a number of different ways of managing wildlife encounters. But ultimately, remaining calm, I would say invest in some bear spray. I've seen that used twice and I've seen it work twice. And it's certainly better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Yeah.
But, you know, we talked about, I mentioned earlier, the five letters that would save your life, and they apply to all the different areas and aspects. The first one I said was to stop.
Right.
When presented with a difficult situation, be it a developing survival situation out on the hill, or be it something as abrupt as an encounter with a wild animal, we want to stop and pause. The next thing I say is to think. Okay, think, assess the situation. What are the challenges? What resources do I have? What options do I have? How much time do I have? What weaknesses do we have as a team, etc.? The next letter is O, observe, look around you. Look for routes out of the situation. Look what new threats, what new opportunities are presenting themselves. The fourth letter is P for plan. You know, at that point, you're going to want to come up with a plan. It might be a three-day plan, a three-week plan to hike out of the mountains after a light aircraft's gone down, or it might be get back in the truck because there's a bear on the path, you know?
Right.
And then the final letter is A, that's act. So we say stopper. We teach people to stopper. Before we do anything, we stopper. We stop, think, observe, plan, and act. Before you stand up, you should check that there isn't a branch that's going to dig into your head. Before you set out on a day hike, you should think, does anybody know where I'm going? You know, you should stop and think about these things. So they're the
Wow, that's great. So we're almost out of time, but I did want to ask you, was there any, like in terms of your own experience being out in the wild, what would you say, if you don't mind talking about it, is one of the most kind of dangerous situations you might have been in, and how did you get through it?
I've been in a number of dangerous situations. I've encountered grizzly bear at very short range and had to fire a warning shot on one occasion against a grizzly bear. I've sustained injuries and all manner of things. But the most serious situation I think I found myself in was I was maybe 60, 70 kilometers into a hike deep into the bush and actually broke my foot. And this was in February, a number of years back. And the weather, as luck would have it, came in very, very quickly and very seriously, very wet snow. And it was a terrible situation. And I hadn't followed all of my own rules. It's funny how that works, you know? I'd only told one person where I was going, and they certainly wouldn't be calling for help for a couple of days because I was expecting to continue on in this situation. Thankfully, I did have all of the right equipment with me. In the end, I chose to stabilize my injury myself and get myself out of the bush. But I had to come up and over a pretty serious ridge. And again, with the snow and the sleet coming in and just saturated and cold. And I was at such a high risk of hypothermia, it might gross you out a little, but this is what I mean by thinking outside the box. You know, the platypus water bottles?
Yeah.
I had two of those, and I was so cold that I actually peed in two of those and strung them with a string across my neck and had them under my armpits for the heat.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah, knowing that hypothermia was going to probably statistically be my my biggest enemy there, and certainly recognizing it and having the knowledge to recognize the early signs, having the right equipment of a container and cordage and being able to think outside the box potentially saved my life.
Wow, that's epic.
It was a heck of a hike, I'll tell you.
Yeah, wow. Well, is there anything else that you might want to mention that we left out in the interview?
No, I would say that we should always make sure that we're properly prepared before heading out into the bush. That involves proper planning and taking the right equipment. I would say that you should learn as much as you can. Knowledge weighs nothing. You can't drop it. It doesn't need batteries. The software won't crash. And you can adapt the correct knowledge to any and every situation, every challenge that presents itself. Coupled with the right knowledge, carry the right equipment. Get the best you can afford. That doesn't always mean the most expensive, but get the best equipment you can afford. There's a thing called false economy. And when your $5 knife snaps because you thought it made sense not to get the $20 knife, you're going to regret it.
Right.
I would say that you should learn a little bit about the plants in the area that you're going to visit. Countless people have sat down and starved to death surrounded by edible plants. Plant food will sustain you, and half an hour's research will let you know the five most common edible plants in the area that you're going to be accessing and the five plants to avoid. Cut it down if you don't have time. Learn three plants that will sustain you. Learn three plants that will poison you, okay, in the area that you're going to visit. That may save your life. Finally, I would say learn how to light a fire quickly. I've given you a tip on that. Anybody can master that skill, and always have the equipment with you. Learn how to make a shelter, but above all, learn how to stay positive, calm, cool, and how to think. That's wow, what will save your life ultimately.
Words of wisdom, and like I was mentioning earlier, I think ones that can apply to a lot of different things, not only wilderness survival. So that is absolutely really cool. So thank you very much, Nick. Could you let us know if people want to take your course, are you teaching these days, and how can they get a hold of you?
Absolutely. We run 8 to 10 basic courses per year. And you can find us on Facebook, of course, Survival in Canada, or simply, Google Survival in Canada, www.survivalincanada.com. You'll see myself there. You'll see our other instructor, full-time instructor, Rob. And we're passionate about what we do. Nobody's ever said, I know an easy way to make $1 million. I'll go and be a survival instructor. We don't right. do it for that. We need a day's wage out of it. We do it because we're passionate. We do it because we love it. So come and join us.
That's great. I'll put that link in the description below as well so people can find you easily. Thank you so much for joining us on the show, Nick, and have a great day.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jesse.
All right, guys, there you have it. Nick Buck, wilderness survival instructor as well as professional mountain guide. He gave us some really awesome insights into how to survive in the wild, including so much about the mentality and psychology of staying alive, which was really great as well. So be sure to check out all our other podcast episodes at highstakessuccess.com. We also have upcoming guests on there and all the information you could need. And until next time, when the stakes are high, success is the only option.